The Mystery of the Blue Train, Agatha Christie. Chapter 16. Poirot Discusses the Case. Everybody looked respectfully at Poirot. Undoubtedly, the little man had scored heavily. The commissary laughed on a rather hollow note. "You teach us all our business," he cried. "Monsieur Poirot knows more than the police." Poirot gazed complacently at the ceiling, adopting a mock-modest air. "What will you? It is my little hobby," he murmured, "to know things. Naturally, I have the time to indulge it. I'm not overburdened with affairs." "Ah," said the commissary, shaking his head portentously. "As for me," he made an exaggerated gesture to represent the cares that lay on his shoulders. Poirot turned suddenly to Fenalden. "You agree, monsieur, with this view? You feel certain that the Comte de la Roche is the murderer?"
"Why, it would seem so.
Yes, certainly."
Something guarded in the answer made the examining magistrate look at the American curiously. Fenalden seemed aware of his scrutiny and made an effort as though to shake off some preoccupation.
"What about my son-in-law?" he asked.
"You've acquainted him with the news. He's in Nice, I understand."
"Certainly, monsieur."
The commissary hesitated, and then murmured very discreetly, "You are doubtless aware, Monsieur Fenalden, that Monsieur Kettering was also one of the passengers on the blue train that night." The millionaire nodded.
"Heard it just before I left London," he vouchsafed laconically.
"He tells us," continued the commissary, "that he had no idea his wife was traveling on the train."
"I bet he hadn't," said Fenalden grimly. "It would have been rather a nasty shock to him if he'd come across her on it."
The three men looked at him questioningly.
"I'm not going to mince matters," said Fenalden savagely. "No one knows what my girl has had to put up with. Derek Kettering wasn't alone. He had a lady with him."
"Ah,
Morel, the dancer."
Monsieur Carrège and the commissary looked at each other and nodded as though confirming some previous conversation. Monsieur Carrège leaned back in his chair, joined his hands, and fixed his eyes on the ceiling.
"Ah," he murmured again.
"One wondered," he coughed. "One has heard rumors."
"The lady," said Monsieur Caux, "is very notorious."
"And also," murmured Poirot softly, "very expensive." Fenalden had gone very red in the face. He leant forward and hit the table a bang with his fist.
"See here," he cried. "My son-in-law is a damn scoundrel."
He glared at them, looking from one face to another.
"Oh, I don't know," he went on. "Good looks and a charming, easy manner. It took me in once upon a time. I suppose he pretended to be broken-hearted when you broke the news to him. That is, if he didn't know it already."
"Oh, it came as a surprise to him. He was overwhelmed."
"Darned young hypocrite," said Fenalden. "Simulated great grief, I suppose."
No, said the commissary cautiously. "I would not quite say that, eh, Monsieur Carrège?"
The magistrate brought the tips of his fingers together and half closed his eyes.
"Shock, bewilderment, horror. These things, yes," he declared judiciously. "Great sorrow? No. I should not say that." Hercule Poirot spoke once more.
"Permit me to ask, Monsieur Fenalden, does Monsieur Kettering benefit by the death of his wife?"
"He benefits to the tune of a couple of millions," said Fenalden.
"Dollars?
Pounds. I settled that sum on Ruth absolutely on her marriage. She made no will and leaves no children, so the money will go to her husband."
"Whom was she on the point of divorcing?" murmured Poirot.
"Ah, yes, précisément."
The commissary turned and looked sharply at him. "Do you mean..." he began.
"I mean nothing," said Poirot. "I arranged the facts, that is all."
Fenalden stared at him with awakening interest. The little man rose to his feet.
"I do not think I can be of any further service to you, Monsieur le Juge," he said politely, bowing to Monsieur Carrège.
"You will keep me informed of the course of events?
it will be a kindness. But certainly, most certainly, Fenalden rose also. You don't want me any more at present?
No, monsieur, we have all the information we need for the moment.
Then I will walk a little way with Monsieur Poirot, that is, if he does not object.
Enchanted, monsieur, said the little man, with a bow.
Fenalden lighted a large cigar, having first offered one to Poirot, who declined it, and lit one of his many tiny cigarettes. A man of great strength of character, Fenalden already appeared to be his everyday, normal self once more. After strolling along for a minute or two in silence, the millionaire spoke.
I take it, Monsieur Poirot, that you no longer exercise your profession.
That is so, monsieur. I enjoy the world.
Yet you are assisting the police in this affair.
Monsieur, if a doctor walks along the street and an accident happens, does he say, I have retired from my profession, I will continue my walk, when there is someone bleeding to death at his feet? If I had been already in Nice, and the police had sent to me and asked me to assist them, I should have refused. But this affair, the good God thrust it upon me.
You were on the spot, said Fenalden thoughtfully. You examined the compartment, did you not?
Poirot nodded. Doubtless you found things that were, shall we say, suggestive to you.
Perhaps, said Poirot.
I hope you see what I'm leading up to, said Fenalden. It seems to me that the case against this Comte de la Roche is perfectly clear, but I'm not a fool. I've been watching you for this last hour or so, and I realize that for some reason of your own, you don't agree with that theory.
Poirot shrugged his shoulders.
I may be wrong.
So we come to the favor I want to ask you.
Will you act in this matter for me?
For you personally?
That was my meaning.
Poirot was silent for a moment or two.
Then he said, You realize what you're asking?
I guess so, said Fenalden.
Very well, said Poirot. I accept. But in that case, I must have frank answers to my questions.
Why, certainly, that's understood.
Poirot's manner changed. He became suddenly brusque and businesslike.
This question of a divorce, he said. It was you who advised your daughter to bring the suit?
Yes.
When?
About 10 days ago. I had had a letter from her complaining of her husband's behavior, and I put it to her very strongly that divorce was the only remedy.
In what way did she complain of his behavior?
He's being seen about with a very notorious lady, the one we've been speaking of, Morel.
The dancer, aha.
And Madame Kettering objected?
Was she very devoted to her husband?
I wouldn't say that, said Fenalden, hesitating a little. It was not her heart that suffered, it was her pride. Is that what you say?
Yes, I suppose you might put it like that.
I gather that the marriage has not been a happy one from the beginning.
Derek Kettering is rotten to the core, said Fenalden. He's incapable of making any woman happy.
He is, as you say in England, a bad lot. That is right, is it not?
Fenalden nodded.
Très bien. You advise Madame to seek a divorce.
She agrees.
You consult your solicitors.
When does Monsieur Kettering get news of what is in the wind?
I sent for him myself and explained the course of action I proposed to take.
And what did he say? Murmured Poirot softly.
Fenalden's face darkened at the remembrance. He was infernally impudent.
Excuse the question, monsieur, but did he refer to the Comte de la Roche?
Not by name, growled the other unwillingly. But he showed himself cognizant of the affair.
What, if I may ask, was Mr. Kettering's financial position at the time?
How do you suppose I should know that? Asked Fenalden after a very brief hesitation.
It seemed likely to me that you would inform yourself on that point.
Well, you are quite right. I did. I discovered that Kettering was on the rocks.
And now he has inherited £2 million.
La vie! "It is a strange thing, is it not?"
Fenalden looked at him sharply.
"What do you mean?"
"I moralize," said Poirot.
"I reflect. I speak the philosophy. But to return to where we are, surely Monsieur Quatrain did not propose to allow himself to be divorced without making a fight for it."
Fenalden did not answer for a minute or two. Then he said, "I don't know exactly what his intentions were.
Did you hold any further communication with him?"
Again a slight pause. Then Fenalden said,
"No."
Poirot stopped dead, took off his hat, and held out his hand.
"I must wish you good day, monsieur. I can do nothing for you."
"What are you getting at?" demanded Fenalden angrily.
"If you do not tell me the truth, I can do nothing."
"I don't know what you mean."
"I think you do. You may rest assured, Monsieur Fenalden, that I know how to be discreet."
"Very well, then," said the millionaire. "I'll admit that I was not speaking the truth just now. I did have further communication with my son-in-law."
"Yes?"
"To be exact, I sent my secretary, Major Knighton, to see him, with instructions to offer him the sum of £100,000 in cash if the divorce went through undefended."
"A pretty sum of money," said Poirot appreciatively.
"And the answer of Monsieur, your son-in-law?"
"He sent back the word that I could go to hell," replied the millionaire succinctly.
"Ah," said Poirot. He betrayed no emotion of any kind. At the moment, he was engaged in methodically recording facts.
"Monsieur Quatrain has told the police that he neither saw nor spoke to his wife on the journey from England. Are you inclined to believe that statement, monsieur?"
"Yes, I am," said Fenalden. "He would take particular plans to keep out of her way, I should say."
"Why?"
"Because he had got that woman with him."
"Mirel?"
"Yes."
"How do you come to know that fact?"
"A man of mine, whom I'd put on to watch him, reported to me that they both left by that train."
"I see," said Poirot.
"In that case, as you said before, he would not be likely to attempt to hold any communication with Madame Quatrain." The little man fell silent for some time. Fenalden did not interrupt his meditation.